session number 10657, Reel 11.
And round about this time, I don't know where we got the information from. It might even have come after the war, but 50 Div had been nicknamed the Gazala Gazelles by the Germans because they seemed to think that we moved very rapidly to get away from what was going on, which in actual fact it was a breakout, but we were able to put them right on that at a later stage, including the 90th Light, who we all seemed to be coming up against. It was their crack regiment that moved with the panzers. From the frontier, the Desert Army withdrew to Matruh. And during the early hours of June the 24th, the battalion took up positions some 5 miles southeast of Mirza Matruh. Now, during the afternoon of the 25th, we were moved to a position in wadis due south of Matruh, 3 miles west of the earlier positions. Section positions were dug and mines were laid. Is it coming through all right? Section positions were dug and mines were laid. And then, to everybody's intense annoyance, at noon the next day, the battalion was moved yet again, some 10 miles to the south, to a position that we were to hold with a rearguard action if necessary to allow the 10th Indian Division to withdraw from Matruh. And late that afternoon, the battalion was taken by transport to this new area, which was on the top of a steep escarpment, high, running parallel to the coast at this point. And the defences of the battalion were sited on a line of telephone poles which went through the battalion area direct to the coast. We were supposed to lay a minefield, but there were no mines left because we'd laid some at the previous position. This was one of the snags of taking up a defended position, digging the slit trenches, laying the mines and everything, and then suddenly having to move somewhere else.
Didn't give you time to take the mines?
No. The enemy at this particular time were about 3 miles to the southwest of the battalion where it was on the escarpment. Rommel's main force was by now in position facing the middle of the main Matruh defences. Now, we've got page 110 is where now here is a B Company story here, because I was with Ian Pitt, he was the company commander, and of course it goes on to the 9th Battalion and Wakenshaw's VC, which happened very close to us. So do you want that one? Look, this is a B Company story in actual fact.
Is this the business with the tanks attacking?
Yes. Coming in? Yes.
Yeah. You said something about that earlier on, but just that you'd been in position and a long way ahead of you saw the captured American tanks, the Hunnies
yes.
Approaching the anti-tank guns, eventually managed to drive them off.
Yes. All right. The battalion stood to at first light on June the 27th. The battalion was widely dispersed, with each company at least 1,000 yards from battalion HQ, which is quite a long way. Although the 8th was not in action, it was a memorable day in many ways. Shortly after daybreak, enemy anti-tank guns opened fire on a group of vehicles lagered in the battalion area, belonging to the 11th RHA. They were soon scattered by the anti-tank gunfire and departed in all directions for the shelter of the low ground to the east and below the top of the escarpment, leaving us where we were, on top of the escarpment. Now, in my company area, Captain Pitt, the company commander, was inspecting one of his platoon positions and saw a large column of vehicles not more than 2,000 yards away to the southwest. The platoon commander said it was the first he had seen of them and that they must have come up in the night. Most of the vehicles seemed to be British, but there was a possibility they had been captured at Tobruk and were in fact driven by Germans. As Pitt and the platoon commander watched through binoculars, a British truck drove past the column towards the B Company positions, followed by a British dispatch rider, both going very fast. Suddenly there was a long burst of machine gun fire, easily recognisable as Spandau, from the direction of the column, and the truck pulled up in flames, short of our company position. There was no doubt that the column was enemy, and it was the first of many German and Italian supply convoys to use this route across the front of B Company during the course of the day. Ian Pitt, the company commander, called Battalion HQ on the wireless, and our artillery, supporting 151 Brigade, soon ranged on this excellent target, scoring hits on several of the enemy trucks. Soon after this, the Germans launched a fierce frontal attack against the 9th Battalion Durham Light Infantry on the left flank of the 8th Battalion. And simultaneously, German 88mm anti-tank guns engaged a squadron of Honey tanks moving down the line of telegraph wires.
That was across your front, wasn't it?
Yes. Immediately behind B Company, Captain Pitt's B Company area. One tank was hit, and as the crew bailed out and ran past Pitt's Company HQ, a tank corps colonel shouted to Pitt, "Keep an eye on my tank, old man, I'll be back for it." He never returned, and when a few minutes later a Beng carrier with the tank was drilled amidships, the Hunnies made off. Well, now, for the next 2 or 3 hours, there was a terrific battle for the 9th Battalion positions, and slowly but surely, the ferocity of the repeated German attacks wore down the resistance of the DLI battalion. And it was during this action that Private Adam Herbert Wakenshaw of the 9th Battalion won the Victoria Cross.
You say you were, you know, company positions of 2,000 were
1,000 yards,
yards apart. Could you actually see the position of the next company along, or were they invisible?
Well, you wouldn't be able to see very much, I don't think, because they'd be down in their slit trenches anyway. That's a good point, because I doubt very much whether you would be able to tell where they were until they started opening fire on something.
Was there anything in between your company position and the next one? Were there any mines or obstacles?
No,
or something like that?
No, we hadn't been able to lay mines, you see. No barbed wire. We were out in the open on top of the escarpment. It was not at all a good position in many ways, but it was far better than the one we eventually went to, which was below the escarpment.
When you saw these Italian convoys going across the front, or German convoys, did the rifle companies ever open fire on them, or did they just call in the artillery?
No, I think it was an easier thing to just get the artillery to drop something in amongst them. It was much more likely to have an effect, and it wouldn't give away the position necessarily of the rifle companies. You couldn't have done it with mortars, I don't think, because the range would have been too long. So it was either something that you could do with calling on guns back behind us, or with your own anti-tank guns. But it was better to use the guns back, because you weren't giving away any localities.
You mentioned that this truck coming past the parked column and being shot up, and you said there was a dispatch rider with it. What happened to him?
I don't know what happened to him. There's no note about that, no.
Did the news about the fall of Tobruk have any significant impact on the way you were thinking?
Well, I think
I don't know, you... It's very difficult to describe, really, but I think you get a point of, you know, you have an approach to all these things. The bigger the disaster, the less you try to make it affect you. You know, I mean, it had happened. Tobruk had fallen, and we'd been into Tobruk anyway the day before to the Nephi to pick up stuff from the Nephi, which they couldn't get rid of to save it being destroyed. And we'd had a quick look round and that, you know. But it's a very funny thing. All sorts of disasters can happen to units behind you and in front of you and on your flanks. But when it's not happening to you, you don't always get the full message of the danger of the situation to yourself or to your own unit, because you always think that, well, that's too bad, they, you know, a bit of bad luck there, but we'll be able to pull all right, pull through all right when we have to do our bit. I don't think you, it doesn't have such a demoralizing effect on troops as people think. Not on British troops anyway, because I think they tend to treat, as I say, the bigger the disaster, the more they tend to treat it as something that, oh well, it won't happen to us, it's happened to them, that's too bad. And after all, when you're being told what to do and the orders are coming from corps and division, you don't have any say in it. You could be pushed into a horrific battle at a moment's notice. You just have to accept what's going on.
Do you think that their horizons were limited to the battalion?
The
brigade. Their horizons were limited to the battalion and the brigade.
I think very much the case. Yes, I mean there's a whole of the 9th battalion going into the bag, which was very close to us, and we'd had the 9th battalion had been in trouble once before at an earlier stage when they'd been involved in an abortive attack. But it's a funny point of view that you get. It happens to the other guy, but it doesn't happen to you. And the morale in the 8th Battalion was very high. It was a very good battalion in that respect. I think very largely because we'd been the most successful of the 3 DLI battalions with our commerce raiding. I think that had a lot to do with it.
So being bundled out of Kazan didn't really worry them?
Well, we were going home. You could say that we were going in the right direction for Alexandria or Cairo, if you like. But I don't know. They were more annoyed and disappointed about having to break out of Gazala, in actual fact. But when it became a fait accompli and we got to do it, okay, well, then you saw the good side of it. Well, at least we're bloody well going to turn left at Bir Hakeim and then shoot towards Maddalena. That's the Italian frontier. You know, that's not all that way from Alexandria and Cairo and the Delta and what have you. So that was really what it was like.
You were saying that you were up on the escarpment and laid out, and there'd been enemy movement all about and so forth, and they'd bidden this tank attack, which had been repelled by the 2-pounders and so on. And then I think you were moved from the escarpment.
Well, yes, you see, what happened was well, first of all, after the loss of the 9th Battalion, the Germans had paid dearly for the capture of the 9th, and they did not exploit their success by switching their assault troops against the 8th. They'd had a pretty good tousing, the Germans, actually, and the 9th Battalion had put up a bloody good fight. So we didn't get the attack was not switched onto the 8th Battalion straight away.
The 9th Battalion were on your left, was it?
The 9th Battalion.
Or had been, or they were.
It doesn't say.
But anyway, they were lined up in the.
Yes. They were marched off, actually, in the Wakenshaw scene. Now, I don't think there's anything about that.
Was this withdrawal then to lower ground because they'd been taken?
Well, I don't know why. I don't know why we came off the top of that escarpment. Actually, I can carry on actually from the bit here. As I say, we didn't get involved in any action because the Germans had had a bit of a pasting overrunning the 9th Battalion. And at that stage, General Ritchie decided to launch 50 Div and the 5th Indian Division that night against the Germans in the Mingar Quam area, M-I-N-G-A-R, Q-A apostrophe A-I-M, 8 miles south of the 8th Battalion positions.
So you're moving inland then, rather than...
Yes. The raid was to be in transport, like Gazala. In other words, we were going to go out and we were going to come back with the 6th Battalion on the left, the 8th Battalion on the right of the 151 Brigade attack. Yes.
Did you have any idea of why this motorised raid was being mounted? Was it supposed to be a spoiling attack to stop them from closing in on your positions, or was there no sort of explanation? No,
I don't think there wasn't any explanation. I think that it had worked quite well breaking out of Gazala and disrupting their lines of communication and everything, and I think the object of cutting and disorganising the enemy lines of communication, bearing in mind they're only 8 miles away at Mingar Quam. So if we could have gone through there and then come back and shot them up in both directions, which in fact we had to do, it would disrupt their LFC and probably put their programme back a bit. I think it was quite a sort of interesting move by Ritchie, which I don't think he would have made unless he had realised that we'd been able to motor out of Gazala. 8 miles to the south.
I think you said earlier on when we were discussing it that on this occasion the Germans were better prepared to meet you, especially when you were on the way back.
They were at Mosamatru, definitely, yes, than they were at Gazala. Definitely, yes, I do come to that later on, actually. I can give you the object here, if you like. At 4 o'clock, the 8th Battalion Company commanders were summoned to Battalion HQ. The battalion, less C Company, which was to be detached, was to form up at last light in a tight column on the right flank of the brigade and was then to drive south through the German lines and the enemy columns moving eastwards to Mingar Quam. Every German lager and group of vehicles was to be attacked and destroyed. And having reached an assembly area, there was a possibility that the battalion would then have to return to Matru. It sounded a crazy plan, another attack on wheels with all its disadvantages. But the successful action of the division at Gazala had apparently convinced the army commander that the Gazala Gazelles could succeed with a repeat performance. Now we go on from here, actually. This is the story of the breakout from Matru and back again. And we've really got to take that from here.
That was another enforced withdrawal, wasn't it? The breakout back from Matru.
Yes. We see, we didn't actually get back onto the top of that escarpment until after we'd done this breakout. When I said earlier on that we had to occupy an even worse position, it was after the breakout and coming back again that they shifted us below the escarpment, which they called a rest area.
That would seem to violate the general principle of always holding high ground if you're going to be overlooked.
Yeah. I don't know why that was done, actually, but there's no doubt about it.
doubt. Were there no other British troops up on the escarpment then?
No.
So it was abandoned to...
You'll see what happens, yes. I mean, we had to go over the top of the escarpment, you see. Shall I go on with this story of what happened to the column?
Yes.
The battalion column. Well, at last light, the battalion column formed up in good order under light shell fire from a German 105mm gun, which had obviously been positioned to harass the D&I brigade. Then a slight setback occurred. It had been arranged that a wave of Honey tanks would precede the battalion column. However, an error was made in the timing arrangements. The Honeys started off before they should have done and ran into heavy anti-tank fire. They wheeled about, and the men of the 8th Battalion first saw the tanks, which were supposed to support them, as they raced back over the desert towards the battalion. That, I think, makes the point that it was a fairly large area, and even the tanks, whatever they were doing, until they started coming back, weren't all that much in view. Somebody shouted that they were German, and with a matter of seconds, several machine guns and brains were firing at the Honeys. No damage was done, but the tank commander quite rightly objected to this unfriendly reception. The tanks disappeared, leaving the battalion without their support for the operation. So we lost the Honey tanks.
So this was not then just a purely infantry on wheels operation. It wasn't going to be a combined arms.
That's it. That one would have been, yes.
Well, was there any artillery support arranged as well to help with the raid?
Well, there would always be. No, I don't think so, because when you can only have artillery support with infantry moving slowly, like our men. You can't do it when you've got moving, which, even though they're going fairly slowly, you couldn't have used artillery, I don't think, unless they were firing quite a long way ahead. And then I think that might have given the game away that we were going to do something. I think that point's made, actually, later on. Yes, it had been arranged that a wave of Honey tanks would precede the battalion column. Anyway, there was a full moon, and as the 8th Battalion column moved south and passed through the area where the battle with the 9th Battalion had taken place, the column moved cautiously towards a ridge over which enemy convoys had been passing all day. The Bren carriers were in front, with orders to charge and open fire at any vehicles which came into sight. It was an eerie experience, travelling in this column with dark, moving shapes on the flanks. Suddenly the carriers came upon a small group of German trucks and opened fire, with Brens and Vickers. The Vickers had been mounted in the open backs of 15 hundredweight trucks.
Where did you get the Vickers from? Were they...
Cheshire machine guns. Cheshire's, yes. They were with us most of the time. Yes, you see, there's a... goes on a little bit here. By this time, the 6th Battalion column and several columns of 69 Brigade and 5th Indian Div had contacted groups of enemy, and there were minor skirmishes going on to the north, south, east and west. It was a glorious free-for-all, nobody being sure who was friend or foe. After the 8th Battalion column had travelled 4 miles, a halt was called in the area of the first objective to allow vehicles which had fallen into slit trenches to be extricated, and whilst the column was stationary, it was engaged by enemy anti-tank guns, British anti-tank guns, and these were the new 6-pounders, returned the fire until the engagement had to be broken off because the column, thought to be the 6th Battalion, came into the line of fire. Whilst the 8th was still stationary, a German 8-wheeled armoured car, its driver obviously unaware that the vehicles were British, glided quietly into the middle of the column and parked alongside one of the battalion 2-pounder anti-tank guns, which was on its portee. The NCO in charge of the gun, after taking a second look at the black cross on the turret of the armoured car, put a round through the enemy vehicle at 5 yards range to knock it out. Yes.
What happened to the armoured car? Did it just brew up straight away? Or?
I don't know. I'm thinking, well, not necessarily. It might not have done, but it doesn't say. I mean, don't, you know, don't, a column's pretty widely dispersed, actually, and so maybe something that was happening the other side of the column people wouldn't take very much notice of, but there was firing going on all the time anyway. It might have brewed up, or it just put it out of action, probably killed the crew.
But that would be a six pounder, would that?
Six pounder.
That would have been a shell rather than just a solid shot, wouldn't it?
Might have been. No, solid shot, I would have thought. Might have been.
Six pounder.
I think so. I don't think it would have been a. Oh, yes, I think it would have been solid shot, all right.
Where were you with the column then? Were you in
B Company?
B Company.
Yes, I was with B Company.
How would B Company be laid out for this column? Sort of formation their trucks be in?
Well, I think it's a tight column. I think probably depends, but it doesn't say what was in the column, does it?
It must have been fairly close together because of because you were operating at night.
That's right. Well, I would have thought, you see, I think this would have been more of an infantry column with Cheshire machine guns in support than anything else. There wouldn't have been any two-pounder anti-tank guns, I don't think, or anything like that. Just a hard-hitting infantry column that went out, did some damage and came back again. Unlike the others, when they were pulling out of Ghazala, had to take anti-tank guns and everything with them as part of the column.
But were you, in this infantry column, which was, I presume, soft-skinned vehicles with chaps in them?
Yes.
Were they in a single file, or were they drawn up in more than one file?
No, I'd say I would have thought probably about three or four, something like that.
So
it'd
be a column three or four vehicles wide.
I would think so. Yes, column one, two, three, four. I think something like that. Yes, it wouldn't have been one. It was a single column when we came out of the wadi, because it had to be, because of the fact that only one vehicle could get over the top at a time. But that comes later.
The later breakout.
Later breakout, yes, that's right. Yes. Right, soon after the incident with the armoured car, the 8th Battalion moved on again, continuing towards a second and final objective in the face of sporadic enemy fire. Three enemy trucks suddenly came into view, moving across the path of the column, and the Bren carriers, which were out in front of the column, went into action again. But two of the trucks turned off to the south and escaped. The third vehicle, a captured British gun tractor, was intercepted, although the driver managed to get away in the darkness. There were, in fact, a large number of British trucks which had been captured by the Germans, which they used, and it became very confusing from time to time. Shortly after this, a large column of vehicles thought to be from the 5th Indian Division was seen moving away to the west. But before contact could be made, the vehicles drove off at high speed and voices in Italian were heard. So that was obviously an Italian column and not an Indian one. The whole operation was rapidly becoming equally confusing to both sides, and Captain Pitt, who was the officer commanding B Company, and I was one of his platoon commanders, had an amusing experience which will serve to illustrate the chaotic state of affairs. Pitt's truck drove for several hundred yards alongside a three-tonner before Pitt, glancing sideways, noticed that the driver was wearing a German cap. The German saw Pitt at the same time and turned his truck round by swerving it violently to flee from the British column. This was no isolated incident. That night held many similar experiences in store for the men of 50th and 5th Indian Divisions. British columns mingled with enemy supply convoys made up of captured British vehicles, and it was impossible to identify friend from foe without driving alongside a suspicious vehicle to take a good look at the driver. And this became more so as they got further into the lines of communication areas where there were supply trucks and that.
Does this mean then that some of these trucks, capture trucks, hadn't been marked?
Oh no, they certainly hadn't been marked, no. Some of them might have been and some of them might not have been, but you couldn't always see what the markings were. I don't think there was anything on the side anyway. The markings were on the front mainly,
I think they would have taken off the... I mean, for instance, if the three-tonner had got a plate slotted down on the front, which is the way they used to be, they might have taken that off. There was nothing on the side anyway to identify what it was, and you were simply running alongside a British three-tonner with a German driver in it, which did happen to a lot of people. The Brigade HQ column was suddenly came upon a lager of seven or eight German supply lorries. A 1,500 weight truck with a machine gun mounted on the back, that would be the Schesches, was manoeuvred into position as the unsuspecting drivers of the German vehicle sat around the cab of one of the lorries, singing. Machine gunners opened fire to rake the enemy vehicle and group of drivers. All over in a few seconds, and those Germans who had not been killed outright were taken prisoner. There were many such incidents, and there is no doubt that the drive south by 5 Indian and 50 Div took the enemy by surprise and threw at least some of his night lagers into confusion. So really, they weren't as prepared for us, although this was a follow-up of Gazala. They certainly didn't seem to have been prepared for this one. Meanwhile, the 8th Battalion was still under sporadic fire as it neared the final objective, the limit set for the column's penetration. It was an eerie experience as the vehicles advanced towards blue and white enemy anti-tank tracer shells, which appeared to bounce 50 to 60 feet at a time as they came towards the column. When the battalion reached the objective, the whole area where the unit...